Our guest's passion started with a primary school trip just 10 years ago and has turned into an international book deal. All the more remarkable as Oscar Thomas is still a student. A London publisher has picked up the 20-year-old's first book, A Naturalist's Guide to the Birds of New Zealand. It's a beautiful little book, chock full of stunning photographs, the vast majority taken by Oscar. You can see some of his work in a gallery on our webpage, rnz.co.nz/9to-noon. The book identifies 238 of New Zealand's birds, common, unique, and those sacred to our shores. Oscar is New Zealand's youngest tour guide on the bird sanctuary, Tiritiri Matangi. He has a massive love for birds, matched only by his skills as a photographer.
Ever since I was back in primary school, I have had an interest in birds, especially in New Zealand, just because there's so many unique species around here and a lot of them are endangered and threatened. And I wanted to actually sort of get out and about and learn more about them myself and what ways I could possibly go about helping them and educating people more about them as well.
How did it start? Was there one moment in childhood where you just got hooked? Was there one place where you just got hooked?
Yeah, so we actually had a school trip when I was in year five at primary school. I was living in Auckland at the time, and we were taken to Tiritiri Matangi, which is an island sanctuary in the Hauraki Gulf, which has an amazing range of native birds. It was actually farmed over the 1800s and early 1900s and then restored with over 280,000 trees planted there in a 10-year period, and 12 species of bird were translocated there to sort of bring back the environment to how it might have been before humans arrived. One in particular, the kōkako, was put there sort of an experiment to see how they could do on a small island setting. And I really wanted to see one of those, which I didn't end up doing that day. So I had to go back, and I had to go back a few times to actually see one. And then in the end, I just got hooked and started becoming a tour guide there, which there's a volunteer group, and they bring lots of visitors around the island. And I got involved with that, and it just went from there, really.
What was it about the kōkako? Because that's remained a favourite. In fact, I think you were part of the campaign for it to win Bird of the Year. What is it about that bird that you find intriguing? It's not just how these animals look, is it? It's how they behave.
Yeah, the kōkako is a really unique bird. It was one of the most ancient families in New Zealand. It's part of the wattle birds, so it's related to the Tiakea saddleback and the extinct huia, which hasn't been seen in over 100 years. The kōkako is quite large, blue-grey, and has a black mask on its face and two blue wattles under its bill. And they're really charismatic and live in pairs in massive territories and tend not to fly, more sort of hop around the trees and climb up and glide down. And they have an amazing song as well. I describe it as melodious yet mournful. Some call it like an organ as well. And they call it dawn and dusk, and it can travel for up to kilometres. And it's just a real staple of how New Zealand's forests are meant to sound.
What does this do? I know what it does for me. What does it do for you when you're out in an environment like this and just really focusing on something amazing like a bird and its habitat and its sounds and the sounds and sights that surround it? What's the effect that it has on you?
I find it very calming, just being out in nature, knowing how it's meant to be, away from human influence and the noise of like cities and cars and stuff, is just really clears the mind. And it's just an amazing experience to be able to be with some really special birds and in the place where they're meant to be as well.
So let's talk, how many bird species have you seen in New Zealand?
213.
How many are in the Naturalist's Guide to Birds of New Zealand?
The book actually covers 238. I do have a checklist at the end of the book with all of the birds that have been seen in New Zealand, including those that have gone extinct in the last couple hundred years, which comes to 391. So there are quite a few that I haven't seen. Most of those are actually ones that live in the subantarctic islands south of New Zealand, because those have notoriously hard access. And yeah, there's a few still on the mainland that I'm still looking out for. One in particular would be the Fiordland-crested penguin, which lives just in the south coast of the South Island in quite remote areas that I still haven't been able to see yet.
That's interesting because I know that some of the accommodation providers down there will occasionally take people out to some secret little nesting places. I'm not sure if it's that species of penguin though, but
Yeah, there are a few spots
And
if you can afford it.
this is part of the challenge, isn't it? Like some birds are extremely common, thank goodness, and in part because of efforts that people have made over the years to help protect them and revive them. But others are rare in number and also in location, difficult locations.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we are lucky to be able to see birds like the Kōkaku around New Zealand. Even though they're still fairly rare, they are increasing in number. There's I think over 4,000 in the North Island now. Of course, in the South Island, they are thought to be possibly extinct, but since the sighting in 2011, we think there might be a couple out there, and they've been classified as data deficient on the hope that we might find evidence that they're still alive.
So 213 species you've seen with your own eyes in New Zealand. What about overseas?
Overseas, I've seen a bit over 500. I spent the last year in Belgium, last year being 2019. I spent on a youth exchange, and that was a really good grounding point to be able to access a few different countries in Europe and see a few different species. And I've also spent a few weeks in Australia as well, which in that time I actually saw 200 species in 2 weeks, and which is pretty much what I've seen in New Zealand my whole life.
And was that because, what was it because? Just because it was a very intensive time, or is it just to do with how condensed sometimes the bird populations can be in parts of Australia? How come that was so productive?
Yeah, Australia is a special case in that they didn't have much of an invasive species problem as New Zealand did, and very high biodiversity in the tropics that was around Brisbane. New Zealand, of course, would have had a similar density of unique species a few hundred years ago, but unfortunately, we've lost, I think, 52 species since humans have arrived in New Zealand.
Let's talk about the photography. And it is striking photography. It's quite close up, the images that you take, so that we get a really good look at the bird in focus. But we're also getting, within the images here, a good sense of its habitat. How do you go about photographing birds?
I tend to just sort of go for the opportunity they present to me. And in most cases, it'll be very far away. And I'll want to, of course, get closer so I can focus more on the bird itself. There'll be certain species that are in situations where I'm not very happy because it doesn't show them in the habitat that they should be in, such as takahē, which is similar to the pukeko, very large, very flightless green and blue rail, which originally were found in the mountains of the South Island, up in tussock areas, and today have been translocated to many islands across in the Hauraki Gulf, for example. We've got a few, and they tend to just stick to sort of grassy fields there, which gives it a bit of an urban feel. And I'd much rather they were in a sort of natural habitat. Like you won't see many photos in there of birds on man-made structures. Even so, there are a few that have started nesting in places like that because it has benefited them. But I do like to see them in their natural habitat.
And to get the bird in focus, but still being able to see sufficient of the habitat in the background, it's quite a skill. What kind of kit are you using? What kind of camera?
The camera I've used for most of the photos is Canon 100D, which is quite compact, and I've got a lens that lets me see really far, up to 600 millimeters, and it lets me get really close and personal with the bird itself. In some cases, I do use it for identification as well. Like if the bird's really, really far away, like even a couple kilometers, I can see what it is maybe with my lens. But I do think there is a balance in terms of having something that can let you zoom in really far and being a good distance away from the bird. The hoiho yellow-eyed penguin, for example, you're not meant to get within 40, 50 meters of them because it stresses the bird out. So it is good to have a lens like that so I can stay at a safe distance and document them from afar as well.
Do you also get very familiar with their behaviour?
Absolutely, yeah. Over time, if I see the same species again and again in different situations, it's quite interesting to see how they respond to different things. Maybe a predator flying overhead or humans disrupting their habitat or just walking right through them. It can be interesting to see the difference of different effects that it can have, and sort of knowing more about that, you can educate others about how they should act around certain species as well.
There's also the matter of timing. It's quite extraordinary what you learn about the anatomy of these birds from a really great shot. I'm looking at the black stilt here, where there's a straight right leg and then the left leg has got a perfect right angle. It looks like it's broken.
Yeah.
And there's a pied stilt also sort of bending his leg in a way that's not possible for me. Is there tremendous variety in literally the way these animals are constructed?
Absolutely. Yeah, the stilts are a really good example because they actually have the longest leg to body size ratio of any bird. The black stilt in particular has very, very long legs, and that joint that you see just below the bird itself is, most would call it the knee, but it's actually more like the ankle. The knee itself is in the body, and that's the reason that it looks like it's bending the wrong way, you know. Most birds have it like that. The penguins on the other extreme, you can only really see the feet of the penguin, and both the ankle and the knee joint are in the body as well. And if you've ever seen a penguin skeleton, it's quite a strange sight.
The other thing, of course, when you're trying to build up as much of a record as you can, is where you have to go to see these birds. Have there been some that are quite rare and that it was a really special moment to track down?
Yeah, I've been lucky to be able to travel across most of New Zealand. There's still a few spots that I'm hoping to visit. For example, Gisborne, I've never been to. But the highlight in particular would have been a trip to the Chatham Islands or the Te Kohu in 2016, which I managed to achieve by volunteering through the Department of Conservation, who actually run some scientific reserves out there that are dedicated to conserving some of our most critically endangered species. So the highlights of that trip were actually the black robin and the Chatham Islands snipe, which are both unique to the Chatham Islands. The black robin in particular had its run-in with near extinction in the 1980s, where there were just five individuals left, including one breeding pair. So they've had a really dramatic comeback. When I saw them in 2016, we saw over 200 individuals.
Sometimes, though, it's close to home, and I think there's a couple at least that were taken in your backyard when living in Auckland. There was the sacred kingfisher and the moorhawk, yeah?
Yeah, I got quite lucky with both of those. Not everyone has them in their gardens, but there are definitely lots of birds in people's gardens, and you should get out and have a look. But the kingfishers were a good one because there's a couple that live around, and you don't see them every day. But the day I got my camera lens, I took it out into the garden, and the kingfisher actually landed on the branch, maybe 3 or 4 meters away from me. And I was lucky to have the few seconds necessary to focus on it and actually capture a nice image that made it into the book. And the moorhawk as well, the ruru, I hear most nights, and was able to go out and find it in the tree just outside my bedroom. And that required a bit more difficulty because it's photography at night. So I had a torch in one hand, the camera in the other, and in the end it produced a really good result.
It's just they're staring at you like, what the heck are you doing? That's a lovely moment,
Yeah.
though, with the kingfisher, isn't it? It's almost like, it was some sort of seal of approval for what you were about to embark on.
Yeah, sometimes the best images actually come from sitting and waiting for the bird to come to you.
The New Zealand falcon, where did you see one in the wild? Where were you?
The first time was staying with some cousins in Wellington, back when I was 14, so that was 6 years ago now. And I saw on the news that there was a pair living up in the town belt that were notorious for attacking the walkers and the joggers that go through their nesting territory, which happened to be right by the path. So I thought, well, I've never seen a falcon. I'll go and have a look for these two, maybe get some photos. And I went into their territory in the town belt up behind Kilburnie, I think. And immediately, one bird came down, swooped at me, sat in the tree, and I snapped one shot, which is in the book. And it called and then came back for another round and ended up knocking the hat off my head. So I just ran off at that point, didn't get too many photos. Actually, quite
I
intimidating.
hadn't thought to ask you whether there'd been any injuries in the course of your pursuits.
Luckily, nothing serious.
We might need to get you trained. You know, there's the wonderful falconers who will train you how to charm them.
Yeah,
There is
wingspan's
some,
amazing.
yeah. The petrels have provided some exciting photographic opportunities. They turn up in unexpected places. What are some stories photographing them?
New Zealand has many different seabirds. The petrels are a very diverse group, and we're lucky to have so many because they're very productive waters, and the length of the country as well goes from subtropical to subantarctic. So we've got a real range of species in the seas off New Zealand. In the Hauraki Gulf, I've seen probably a couple dozen different species of seabird, including a couple of very rare ones. The New Zealand storm petrel, which was actually thought to be extinct since the 1800s, which was only found with, there was only one specimen really known of that. And then it was rediscovered dramatically in 2003. And now you can go out past Little Barrier Island, Hauturu, in a boat and see maybe a couple dozen. I've seen up to 50 in one little flock feeding on the water. The storm petrels are actually known to sort of walk on the water. They sort of flutter back and forth, and it's quite amazing. They're very small and very cute. And now that the breeding grounds were discovered to be on Little Barrier itself, it was actually quite easy to protect them since it was already pest-free. And yeah, they've been thriving actually. They've increased in number every year. And another species was the blue petrel, which is mostly found around Antarctica. So you wouldn't expect one of those off the coast of Northland, but we were actually very lucky to spot one a couple of years back just behind the Paw Knights Islands. I think only about a dozen have been seen off New Zealand itself. Most of them are much further south. And I spotted it in a flock of prions, which are very similar looking seabirds, a small seabird with baby blue colouring on the back, and they sort of there's a lot of very similar looking species. Luckily, the blue petrel stands out because its tail has a white tip. So I saw that and I yelled it out and managed to snap a couple of photos before it disappeared. It only lasted about 10 seconds and then it flew off, and it took me a while to recover from that, really. It was quite amazing.
It must be, you must wonder if your eyes are fooling you sometimes. But this is the thing.
Absolutely.
When you're trained and you're skilled and you're on the lookout, you will see things that everyone else misses.
Yeah, no, the experience definitely helps. But every now and then, I'll have a couple of friends of mine say, "What's that bird?" or send me a photo, like, "What's this?" and it will be something just as cool.
Yeah. True. It's just, again, if we don't know what we're seeing, we miss the moment, which is why this little atlas is so precious. I think, did you talk earlier about the fairy tern?
The fairy tern, not yet, but they are New Zealand's rarest bird. There's less than 40 left, and I've got a few shots in there. I was lucky to have them so close to home. They only live on the coast of North Auckland, and they're exclusive to beaches, and they're disturbed by people who drive over sand dunes and take their dogs close to nesting grounds and other introduced predators like hedgehogs. Actually, people think they're pretty harmless, but they can actually go into the sand dunes and eat bird eggs if they're close enough to the ground. So these guys are facing a lot of threats, and they really need all the help we can get them.
What's the story behind the lucky shot of the long-tailed cuckoo?
Long-tailed cuckoos are notoriously difficult to photograph as well. They tend to stick way up in the canopy of our native forest. They're here over the summer and then go to the Cook Islands over the winter and then come back to breed by laying their eggs in the nest of host species. So they're a parasite, and they lay their eggs in the nest of the Popocatepetl whitehead and in the North Island. And then in the South Island, they lay them in the Mauhkua yellowhead and PPP brown creeper nests. So they don't actually raise their own young. They don't really do much for them at all. But they are a really cool looking bird. Like, they've got a really, really long tail that's probably about as long as the bird itself, if not longer. And it's mottled brown, orange, and white. And they have a sound as well that is very distinctive. It's like a deafening screech, which really gives them away. A lot of people in New Zealand haven't seen one, but they'll definitely know the call if they've been into the proper deep bush of the central North Island or South Island as well. And the bird pictured in the book, I was very lucky. It landed on the branch less than 5 meters from my head, I could hear it calling up in the forest, and then it flew down for whatever reason and posed for maybe 5 seconds. And then a tui actually flew down and chased it off. So I think that's probably why it came and landed next to me. But yeah, they tend to get their presence is not really welcomed in the bush for whatever reason. Like a whole bunch of birds, like tui, bellbird, mob it and chase it off. And it probably might be because they look quite similar to falcon.
Yeah, they do a bit. They're a strange looking bird. But also, tui can be really aggressive, can't they? They can really go another bit.
Definitely, yeah. Tui love to defend sort of their
Yeah.
trees with flowers on them, like pūtikawa. I've seen a pūtikawa tree and a kōwhiwhai tree get defended by a single large male tui from all other ones.
And they keep going. They chase a fair distance as well. You see, this
Yeah,
is the
definitely.
thing. Often you'll spot a bird, right? Just out on a track, say, and you'll be looking, but just when you get it into view is when it takes off. And, do you need a particular kind of stalking skill, or is it just about being quick? Is it about appreciating you're only going to have a few seconds and you need to be quick?
Yeah, I know that all too well, and it definitely depends on the situation. I've been told that I don't make any sound when I walk now because I'm too used to being very quiet and crouching along the track, so my footsteps have basically gone away. It's different for everyone and different for every bird as well. You need to sort of know what it will take for a bird to leave, or if it's already just on its own trajectory and sort of moving around like you're not there, then you can probably be pretty quick and get a photo of it.
Oscar Thomas is our guest, author and photographer in the main of A Naturalist's Guide to the Birds of New Zealand. You're listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. How do you get out and around, by the way? Do you covering a fair whack of the country and also within regions out hunting these birds. Do you drive?
I do not drive.
Do you
Not yet.
e-bike? How do you get around?
I've got a whole bunch of people around me that very, very kindly give me rides places and share my interest as well. And we plan things and go out and look for birds. Sometimes I can convince them myself if there's something really rare around. I'll beg them. I'll pay for the petrol money. I'll do whatever it takes, to get out there. Yeah. Buses can only take you so far. So yeah, I also try to make do with walking as much as I can
Yeah.
around the local area.
It's good that it's not an entirely solitary exercise, actually, although it's probably complicated with someone else being nearby. But why not? What a great way to go and have a day out and about enjoying nature. What are some of the
Yeah, it's good
favourite,
fun.
yeah, what are some of the favourite bird watching sites?
Definitely Te Rere Mātangi, which is the island I mentioned earlier in the Hauraki Gulf, has to be number one just because of the sheer number of times I've been there, and every time I have, it's completely different. You see something different every time, and it's well worth going to take a visit there. Another one would be Arthur's Pass up in inland Canterbury. I'm actually going there this weekend to try find some rock wren, piwowo, which is found only up in the mountains. In valleys, and they live amongst the boulders there. And there's other species that are quite rare, such as the great spotted kiwi, Roroa, which lives under the forest, comes out at night, of course, and the orange-fronted parakeet, or Kakariki Karaka, which lives in Horan Valley. And that's actually one of the only places in New Zealand it can be found.
This has led to many things for you, apart from the book. Have you been doing quite a bit of guiding at Tiritiri?
Unfortunately, I haven't been able to for a while since I haven't been up to Auckland since June, and that was only a couple of weeks visit. I did a fair bit over the summer once I came back from my youth exchange, but this summer I'll be in Auckland for a couple of months and definitely going out at least once a week,
Yeah.
guiding there.
You've done that for a few years though, I think. And
Yeah, I've done it since I was 15.
where are you heading, professionally? You're studying at Otago. What are you studying?
At the moment, I'm studying ecology and zoology, a double major with a Bachelor of Science. But I'm still working out what's going to change next year. Might actually pick up a marine science aspect of that and go focus into seabirds a little bit more. They've got a lot of threats to them. We learned in a lecture the other day that 400,000 seabirds are killed every year by bycatch of fisheries in New Zealand, and that is a staggering number. And I would like to actually look into ways that we can stop that from happening. So I think, yeah, seabirds will be a focus of mine in future. And I will be looking into careers maybe with the Department of Conservation or other fishery mitigation techniques to sort of help that out, you know, do what I can to help them.
In the book, you write about the history of birds in New Zealand, first birds, introduced birds, extinct birds, predators, as part of the guide. How did you get to the point of having the book published? What was the spark for that?
Well, the publisher actually came to me, which was quite unexpected. I was helping out on another book called The 50 Best Birdwatching Sites of in New Zealand, written by the late Liz Light, who actually saw me give a talk at the Birds Auckland meeting, which is every month in Auckland. And she saw some of my photos and said, "Can I include those in my book?" And I was very happy to help her. In the end, I ended up contributing quite a few. And that was published about this time last year. And soon afterwards, the publisher got in touch and said they wanted to make a naturalist guide to the birds of New Zealand. They've done it for quite a few different countries, like Australia, and in Southeast Asia as well, and branched out to New Zealand. And Liz Light suggested that I actually take hold of that and produce the book for them.
What is your advice for any budding ornithologists out there, or someone listening into this and thinking, you know, I've never really thought about it that much, but I'd kind of like to get into doing the same sort of thing?
There's many different ways to approach it. I talk about that a bit in the book, but I would suggest just sort of getting out there as much as you can. Join a club. There's Birds New Zealand, there's Forest and Bird. There's so many different options for people wanting to get into this, and they have field trips, meetings, conferences, all sorts of really cool activities. And if you're more of a solitary person, then just go for walks and explore your local area. You've got no idea what you might find in your backyard, or half an hour walk down the road in a park. You know, I found things half an hour from my house that I wouldn't expect to find anywhere near. You know, just getting out and about, traveling, taking note of what you see every time you do, it might surprise you.
That is our guest, Oscar Thomas. Remarkable achievement it is, that book, A Naturalist's Guide to the Birds of New Zealand. John Beaufort, I think the publisher is, from memory. It is in store now. You can see some of those images to get a taste of it on a gallery on our website, rnz.co.nz/9 to noon.